take your Bibles, please, and turn to Revelation chapter 2. We're in verses 18 to 29. This is the longest of the letters to the churches, and it's written the longest letter, and it's the least significant of the cities. Thyatira is not a significant, well-known Asia Minor city. It wasn't in the days that John wrote or that Christ sent this letter. I do not believe that these churches are chronological. That is, I don't see them as being periods of church history. That's never made any sense to me, although since the 1800s that's been put forward as a viable, legitimate interpretation. And I can see it. You know, one of my favorite Bible expositors, Ironside, he, you know, that's the position that he takes, and he does a great job explaining how this church fits this period of history. I just don't see it. I can't get my mind around it. One, because every church always thinks they're Laodicea. So if you pick up a commentary from the 1800s and read it, if they take the position that they're chronological, they always put them in the last time. We're always Laodicea. Well, you know, that just doesn't make sense to me. Plus, I think you have to spiritualize the text to do that. And so when you come to the problem in this church, you know, you're trying to stick this problem on some kind of a historical occurrence. I just can't see it. So I'll tell you what I think, and then you can go to sleep. I believe that this church message is real simple. Immorality will kill you. That's the point of this letter. The problem in this church is having to do with immorality. And I'm going to follow the majority text, which you may not have even in the New King James. I should have checked it. There's a real difficult reading, which I cannot make sense of any other way than having it actually be the original reading. And it comes down to the individual, the woman that's causing the problems here, Christ calls her your wife in singular. And so that creates another whole level of problems in trying to interpret this. So we'll go through it. Strong churches can do a lot right and still be in trouble. This is a pretty good church as far as churches go, but they can still get themselves into trouble. And they're in trouble with Christ. So verses 18 and 19, let's look at what they're doing right. And to the angel of the church in Thyatira, if you think Thyatira, picture the T with a party hat on and the H, his dancing partner. This is the party church, okay? We'll give you Budax for remembering the other one, but not today because you want to go to Country Burger. To the angel, and I take that to refer to the pastor, and if the majority reading is correct, this would be a proof text on why the angel is a reference to the pastor in these churches. Angel means messenger, so it could go either a spirit being, or it could be the pastor. Either one of those fits. And my personal thinking is that it's referring to the pastor, not because I am one, but because that makes the most sense to me in context as we've gone through this. Plus, Bob Leitner, who was one of my teachers at DTS, whom I just really highly respect his ability in the text, that was his position. To the angel of the church in Thyatira write, these things says the Son of God, the one having the eyes, his eyes as a flame of fire, and his feet like electrum, or fine brass, so the burning eyes and the burning feet. It's not explained. Sometimes you get figures of speech in Revelation that aren't explained. Given the context of the church, my thinking is that he sees what's going on, and his feet are swift to judge. It's a a nuance or a figure of speech dealing with judgment. He knows what's going on in his churches. Like Joseph said, you know, my God sees everything. Not only is this wrong, but God sees. I know your works, plural, and the love. This is a church that's characterized by hard work and true love and faith. This is a church that's solid in their faith in God. Even their doctrine is solid. And your service of ministry, your ministry, they're busy in the churches doing, and they're ministering, and they're loving one another, and they're full of faith. And they're patient. They're long-suffering. Your patience, this is the hupomene, the long-term, long-winded running kind of patience. And your works, the last ones, are greater than the first. So as Christ looks at this church, where they started out, they've moved forward from there, and they're doing better than where they first started. They're doing more work now than when the church was first planted. So it's a good church, but it's in trouble. In the next verses, verse 20 by itself, really, here's the problem. They are allowing an evil woman to continue in the church. But I'm having this against you. Do you see this in verse 20? Present tense, I'm having against you that permit, allow. Actually, you can see this in Acts 11:48, meaning to leave it alone. You're leaving alone, and here's where the majority text reads, your woman. I don't think this refers to the pastor's wife, although it could. There are some that take it that way, your wife, Jezebel. But I think rather that this is a you that refers to the church, even though it's singular. When he writes in verse 19, your works, they're singular, and your patience, it's singular, and your works, the lasts, are better than the first, those are all singulars. So, but I'm having this against you because you're leaving alone your woman Jezebel. So it's a really interesting way to me to see Christ, how he views this church. There's a woman in the church that is owned by the church, if you would, and is a heart and soul part of the church. They know her, and they see her as part of their functioning as a church. Not the whole church, obviously, as we go through this, because what she's doing is truly evil. But it is not... Oh, I'm going to get into so much trouble on this. It is not uncommon for churches to have a dominant, powerful woman that is not an influence for good. That's not uncommon. That it's the dynamics of human systems, and once a woman gets power and keeps power, it's very difficult to try to work with that sort of a situation. No pastor worth his salt would let it continue. But the dynamics of it are truly difficult, especially when it involves immorality, which is the problem here. Let me go back to verse 20. I am having against you that you are allowing, permitting, leaving alone your woman Jezebel, the prophetess, she calls herself, and she is teaching and leading astray my servants. And then he explains how she's leading astray, unto fornication and eating idol sacrificed meats. So here's the problem: immorality and idolatry. And she believes that she's a prophetess, and she's teaching and leading astray, you know, the wandering planet. That's the Greek term here. So she's busy spreading this teaching, her doctrine, and she's leading people along, believers, into fornication and sacrificing, eating sacrifice meat. All right, so why does Paul say in 1 Corinthians that it's okay to eat meat sacrificed to idols, just don't ask questions? Well, because in 1 Corinthians 10, he says if you eat meat sacrificed to idols, it'll kill you. And that's in the context of the temple practices, not buying it in the marketplace. Going into the temple and eating that meat in an idol sacrifice, God will kill you. He's not going to let you do that. You can't drink the cup of idols and the cup of demons and the cup of the Lord at the same. The bodies of the children of Israel litter the wilderness. That's your 1 Corinthians 10. You do this and you're in danger of death. That's why my idea here as we go through this is immorality can kill you. So one thing to go to a market and buy meat. Another thing to participate in an idolatrous affair, which is what's the problem here. Once you have immorality in a church, it's very, very difficult. I'm going to just